Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo and I am a co-host here at Prison Pipeline. Tonight we have on a very special guest, Paul Wright from the Human Rights Defense Center. And Paul's going to be speaking with us about COVID-19 and the U.S. prison system. We're going to be talking about infectious disease control and the spread of COVID-19 within the prison system and what we can do to fight it and prevent it. So, Paul, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for being here. Paul, what's going on right now with COVID in the U.S. prison system? Can you tell us about that? Are there any cases that have popped up yet in the United States? And what are prison officials doing right now? And what are activists doing to deal with this issue?
Well, so far, I haven't seen any reports yet about COVID, of any known cases of COVID at this point in American prisons. I saw some news reports that there have been reports of COVID infecting prisoners in Chinese prisons. But I think that one of the things that's important to note is that prisons, especially American prisons, have long been vectors of disease, especially infectious diseases. We just reported in Prison Legal News how in January of this year, there's an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease at the federal prison in Cullman, Florida. And over the years, pretty much almost every infectious disease outbreak, from drug-resistant tuberculosis, drug-resistant strains of HIV, many of these drugs, Legionnaire's disease, MRSA, our prisons are literally breeding grounds and almost like incubators for these contagious and infectious diseases. And basically it comes down to very simple explanations, as lack of sanitation, a lack of very basic medical care, and crowded living conditions coupled with poor sanitation, poor ventilation. And this has ensured that prisons literally are sources of disease around the country. And the notion that it's because they're prisons and because they're isolated that they aren't really affected by these diseases is kind of a misnomer, because the prisoners may not be going anywhere in and out of the facilities, but the staff are. And typically what happens is that the prisoners get infected, the prisoners are sick, they're the ones that have the diseases, and then the staff take the diseases out of the prison and into the community with them when they leave their workplace each day. And this has been going on for literally centuries, and it has not changed.
So I think that when I think about what's happening with COVID-19 right now in the United States and how it's starting, it's just beginning here. And I think about what happened with H1N1 and how, do you remember when H1N1 came out about 10 or 15 years ago and how that,
yes.
It seems like there's lessons. There was an article in The Hill that talking about four things that we can do to help protect people who are incarcerated. And I would like to say, first of all, that the most important thing that we could do to protect people who are incarcerated is releasing them, especially all of the people who are unjustly incarcerated, who are serving long sentences that are completely unnecessary, serving sentences and mandatory minimums, and people who are just really jailed unnecessarily, including people who are jailed down on the U.S. border. And, that's the first thing that we could do to deal with the health of these communities. And then, of course, as you just said, if we provided adequate health care, adequate sanitation and adequate living environments that were not completely crowded and isolated, that would be ways that we could obviously address it. But going back to the H1N1 flu, which passed through the United States and, had a huge impact on the U.S. prison system. Can you refer to that? Maybe just comment on lessons maybe we've learned from that could be applied to COVID-19?
Yeah, some of the bigger lessons that we've found is I think that the pretty much almost total neglect and lack of basic health care in our nation's prisons, and especially in our jails. Jails in some respects are even worse, because prisoners are coming and going literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're coming in and out of jails. And one of the things that what epidemiologists in this country have long argued, that the criminal justice sector is an ideal place for public health intervention, where doctors and epidemiologists can actually thwart the spread of a lot of diseases. Like, put this in the context, depending on the state, anywhere between 40 and 70% of the prisoners are infected with hepatitis C. And despite this, prisons rarely, if ever, provide treatment. They have to be sued to provide treatment for hepatitis C, even though there's treatments that can cure it. One out of every four people that are HIV infected will pass through a prison or jail in this country in the course of a given year. And again, these are opportunities to give people treatment to ensure they can get health care. And yet, universally, prison and jail officials refuse to do so, providing very minimally constitutionally adequate care, if at all. And I think that part of the problem is that prisoners and arrestees are generally viewed as an expendable population. No one in our government really views this as a population where, even for the sake of the entire citizenry and the sake of the public health of our country as a whole, should receive medical treatment or should be treated for potentially infectious diseases, if nothing else, so that more people can't be infected. And this has been an ongoing issue for literally well over 100 years, and unfortunately, it's quite the disgrace. And I think the United States is alone among industrialized nations in taking this position, but is also alone among industrialized nations of not having a public health care program.
Mm-hmm. So the lack of an adequate public health care program for all citizens in the United States is reflected in the lack of adequate health care within the prison system.
Yes, I think that's probably a fair statement.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the people who don't have adequate health care may end up in the prison system because of co-mitigating factors.
Exactly, and I think that in some respects, I think that the excuse for not providing prisoners with much in the way of medical care meets with the response of, well, law-abiding citizens don't get health care or medical treatment when they need it. Why should prisoners? And, of course, the response to that, too, is that, well, having put prisoners in a cage, you've deprived them of the ability to seek any type of medical care on their own, so at that point the state's responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's literally the government in this country uses that as an argument that to use it to cut both ways. Is, we're going to put you in a cage and deprive you of the ability to seek medical care, but because we put you in the cage and deprived you of that ability, we shouldn't have to give it to you because people we haven't caged yet may not be able to access medical care on their own either.
Paul, the organization you're with is the Human Rights Defense Center. Can you tell me about that for just a quick minute?
Yes, I started the Human Rights Defense Center in 1990 when I was in prison in Washington State. I started out publishing a magazine called Prison Legal News, which folks can find out about at prisonlegalnews.org. And we started out reporting on news and developments around detention facilities and prisons and jails and prison and jail struggle. And over the past 30 years, we've steadily grown. We now have offices in Seattle as well as Florida and Washington, D.C. And in addition to publishing Prison Legal News, we also publish another magazine called Criminal Legal News, which reports on criminal law and procedure and policing. And we also publish and distribute books related to prisoners' rights and prisoner issues. And we also do litigation and advocacy on behalf of people enmeshed in the criminal justice system. We litigate and advocate nationally, not just in Florida where we have offices. And over the years, we've done a lot in Oregon. We've sued the Oregon Department of Corrections and the Umatilla and the Columbia County jails over their policy banning publications. And we have a lawsuit pending in Oregon involving the Multnomah County Jail's practice of handing out debit cards from people that have been arrested. They take their money, and when they're released, they give them debit cards and then charge them fees to access their own money. So this is some of the stuff that the Human Rights Defense Center has done in Oregon over the past 30 years.
Thank you so much.